Good evening, everybody. As it's now just past 6:30, the minutes of the 20th of June meeting have been circulated and were published on the 23rd of June. Has anyone any comment to make on these, or can I sign them?
Sign them off, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Just down there, please, Chairman. Thank you. Cheers.
Do we have any apologies?
Yes, Chairman. Apologies received from Councillor Leeson and also Councillor Loughran, who is substituted tonight by Councillor Hobbs.
Item 3, officers' reports, please. Item 3A, value for money extension letter. Grant Thornton, Liz Wines.
Pick up this item. This is just a letter from our external auditors notifying us that there's been a change from their body that allows them additional time to get the BFM audits completed. As per the letter, largely driven by resource shortages in the sector as a whole, local government audits and what have you. And that it will be done by the 31st of March 2024. The extension is still there. And we're all very confident that the deadline will be achieved.
Have we any comment on the letter? Or can we just take this noted?
Noted, Mr. Chairman. Noted.
Item 3B, annual treasury management report.
So the recommendations are as to note the annual treasury management report and to approve the actual 22-23 prudential treasury indicators as set out in the appendix. This is by much a technical document that sets out the framework that the treasury can operate in within the council. It makes it clear that we can only borrow to service our programmes, what have you, that we can't borrow in advance of need, we can't borrow to speculate or anything like that. It demonstrates how we can do our capital financing requirements, and it also sets out our 22-23 MRP policy required by the DLUHC guidance in here, and it's a key prudential indicator. We don't have any PFIs at present, which I'll refer to in here, but we don't have those. The only thing that may start to become an issue next year is IFRS 16 becoming live. So that is us doing an assessment of all of our leases that we hold, and there may be a number of those that come onto balance sheet and we have to start making provision for through our borrowing. It's a technical adjustment, but the idea is that IFRS accounting will bring substance over form. So in the past, people may have artificially taken on leases so they don't have to reflect on balance sheet the assets which they're taking or the liabilities associated with them. IFRS 16 aims to remove this, get out as it were. So we will be looking for external support to help us with those assessments, as that is frequently easier to work with external auditors for. If you take in a county-wide approach, use the same external advisors, and you use the same benchmarking and valuation techniques of your leases. Trying to go it alone is always a lot more challenging, and it brings up a lot more scope for external auditors to push back on them. So we'll be looking to set up our stall in that manner to help the audit and help make sure that we're as accurate as possible. In terms of the Treasury position, as of the 31st of March...
Just before you move on, just for clarity, do we have any borrowings?
At present, we don't have any.
Have we had any borrowings in the last 10 years?
I'm going to say no, from the way that question is being couched, but I couldn't say that specifically because I haven't looked back that far. Right.
So, In the reasonably near past, we've had no borrowings, and we've got no borrowings at the moment, other than if you classify leases as borrowings.
Yes. So the Treasury position as of the 31st of March 23, is to borrow BFI finances, which again will require disclose in that element. We can see there for our Total debt BWRB is nil, as you say. Our capital financing requirements principal is 3.8 million, which show an underborrowing position against our assets. So, in theory, we could increase our borrowing against those elements, spending those monies. And our total investments were £74 million, with an average annual return of 2%. You can also see the average life is quite low. We do this to maintain a liquid position, so that the council isn't exposed to too much risk. We haven't been locking them in. And then in table 5.12.1, the council's investments held in their respective rates of return is broken down in more detail, that's £74 million. And for your purposes and for clarity, that £74 million includes funds and balances with maybe farm preceptors. It's a moment in time, and it also includes things like section 106 balances. So it isn't that I have £74 million I can play with, or the council can play with, or invest and what have you. It is just the balances we have and our date and how we've allocated them, nothing more than that. We can see in late spending 5.13 and onwards, it showed the investment.
I think you've been slightly underplaying it. The money might be called one section 106, but it is supposed to be spent within the borough.
That is true.
Yeah.
So any balances accruing to those 106 will be added to the section 106 amount as per the indexation agreement. So it's to protect the 106 amount so that they still have the same impact within the area as at the point of being taken.
But it is money specifically allocated to be spent within the area?
Yes.
At some point in time?
Yes.
Whilst the interest rate gained on this is welcome, it's less than the rate of inflation has been.
Yeah. So moving further down into detail, I mean, in terms of the borrowing strategy and control of interest rate risks, we are maintaining an underborrowed position. So that reflects our prudence. We're not trying to stretch the authority or anything. And again, we haven't looked at any long-term investments or long-term borrowing at this point in time. This may come under review if we feel it's a period of significant stability and we understand where we are. However, there's a number of projects that are likely to be delivered over the next 12 months, which will start to reduce that reserve position. So we would not seek to lock any too much of that money up as we start to deliver those. We need to be able to fund them as the invoices come in and what have you. PWRB rates are at the top of page 13. It really starts to show those peaks and troughs, the PWRB borrowing, how they're starting to stabilise. We would generally go to the PWRB as our first point of call if we were to start to borrow. The gilt yields and the US Treasury yields, again, you can see that trend as they track each other. This is more for information purposes rather than anything that we would start to apply. And then on page 15, you can start to see there how the difference between that 60,845 versus what we hold in our investment balances, it starts to demonstrate the difference between our reserve position. So for the year, the total investment income was 1.6 million compared to a budget of 650,000. So a very favourable position to be in. Again, as the chief executive was reflecting, inflation has been running higher than our investment income, driving up a number of our cost pressures within service delivery. So it's welcome income to help us offset some of those inflationary pressures we're starting to see. And again, the appendices started moving to our prudential indicators. They are as listed, so the ratio of financing costs, gross borrowing requirements for leases. See that 1.6, you can expect to see that starting to grow significantly under IFRS 16, we think, at this point in time. But that work will be done over the next few months once we've successfully procured somebody to come and help us do that work with an appropriate tool and templates.
Do the committee have any questions? Do you want me to go through it page by page if you've got any? Or are we prepared to take the report as presented? What are we asked to do? Is this a note as well?
Back on page 4, Chairman.
Yeah. It's historic, so I move that the report be noted, Captain Chairman.
Have we anybody who will second that? All in favour?
Thank you.
So
page 19, Chairman.
Page 19. item 3C, Treasury Management Mid-Year Report.
So the mid-year report, as suggested, is midway through our year. Really, it's here to report on whether we've exceeded any of our borrowing limits, be that the operational limit or our authorised limit, or how close we came to the operational boundary. As you can see on page 22, we didn't. We were nowhere near those. We didn't take on any borrowings, so we didn't go to any of our borrowing limits. We didn't need to revise our borrowing limits. We're not asking for permission to change our borrowing limits at this point in time. In terms of the capital, prudential indicator for capital expenditure, the table for the capital expenditure and the changes since the capital was originally agreed at budget time, you can see the increase is largely driven by slippage in the various programmes in 23-24 original estimate to the 23-24 revised estimate on page 22. It's not a case, and obviously we've had some additions come through in the various reports to Council and Cabinet, some new programmes and what have you. Page 23 covers off how it is being financed. It's being largely done by capital grants and contributions, as you'd expect, and an element of revenue contributions, so there is still no need for borrowing in the 23-24 revised estimate with the programmes that we currently have in place. So although members are aware we're delivering quite a large amount of potential regeneration of town, it's again through central government grants and funding. We aren't looking to match that in any fashion with our borrowing at this point in time, so it's all being financed there for the 23-24 year. The further prudential indicators on 23, so the capital financing requirements, it remained the same, and to be honest, that's the case largely throughout our indicators. We aren't doing anything that's going to move debt. We aren't looking to do any financial instruments. We aren't doing loans ourselves or looking for a banking license. We're a very, very stable organisation, and the 6 monthly report reflects that. This is more for councils that have significant investment portfolios or doing more adventurous things and need to report on it more frequently. This was designed to help them inform members about what was going on more so. As you can see from this, we are incredibly stable. Where we start at the start of the year is largely where we end up at the end as well. We haven't done anything outside that. Referring back to some of our earlier points about the investment team on page 29, we can see the investment balances as of 30 September were at 78,720,000, so you can compare that to your figure, so you can see there's been an increase in that position, which is good news for our investment income totals. And then the interest rate forecast, relatively stable, but we aren't expecting to see any really significant drops until late next year, probably starting to fall back. September time is what they're thinking at the moment, but we're not too sure. So we'll obviously reflect a degree of prudence as we start to pull together the budget.
Any questions? I think we have to then look for noting this report.
I was going to say, as this is a historic document, I think we move to note the report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 3D, the Strategic Risk Register.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to start with an apology. I've literally just spotted that it refers to this being the update at the 1st of April. In actual fact, it's the update at the 30th of September. So we undertook a review of the risk register at the end of September. And at that point, you'll see that the number of risks that the Council's facing, or strategic risks that the Council's facing, has been reduced from 8 to 5. And all the 3 of the reductions have been taken out of the amber category. If I just turn you to the following page. 2 pages, I'm sorry. So the 3 risks that have been deleted, the first one of those is the failure to work in partnership. These are set out in 5.7. So we've removed the risk around failure to work in partnership, largely because we now see that as being more of an operational issue. It was originally put in when the pandemic first started back in 2020, when we were doing a lot of partnership working with a very specific context. We kept on risk register in recognition of the cost of living issues that we were experiencing, but now that's kind of starting to settle. I think we feel as though it's still an issue, but it's not a strategic one, so I think we've moved that down into an operational risk. Similarly with the following risk, which was all around the construction and operation of HS2, and things have obviously moved on somewhat since we actually even did this review. So again, we've moved that one into operational.
And Judith, before we move on from HS2, do we have any risks because they're not doing it?
No, well, probably a different set of issues, but this one, the risk would predominantly be focused anyway around the environmental impact. I think probably the issues that the borough may face as a result of it not going ahead are slightly different.
If I may, Chair, we've got a meeting coming up shortly with HS2 to better understand what the impact of the decisions made by government will be. There are issues around capacity at Handacre link, and we need to understand the flow of trains from Birmingham and to London and the impact that will have if HS2 is going to free up some capacity on the West Coast Main Line, which would have been helpful to our regeneration work at Station Gateway and so forth. We don't anticipate having a significant risk in terms of the delivery of that programme, but we need to better understand what people will be able to do in terms of travel from Stafford to London in the future.
Thank you.
The other risk that we've reviewed and downgraded to an operational was around the delivery of Westbridge Park, and that one's now substantially complete. Again, things have moved on since we did the review at the end of September. The other change that we've made to risk register, it hasn't changed the numbers, it's more of a point of detail, was the risk around the council's key contractors and their ongoing viability and value for money. And originally, again, this is one that went back to the start of the pandemic, and at that point we were covering off the refuse collection contract and the leisure contract. We kept on for a little while, partly because of some of the issues again associated with the cost of living. We've now taken the decision to remove the wording around the refuse collection contract, and the only one that we're keeping referencing there at the moment is around leisure. But again, that one's been kept under review. So that summarises the key changes to the strategic risk register, I say, at that half-year point.
Is anyone any questions? Shall we note, as we're asked to do, the strategic risks?
Chairman, I think.
Oh, sorry.
He's
got a question.
I think so.
And we were doing so well.
it's because my other paper was it? Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, noted then, please.
Okay. Are we all happy with the progress that's been made? Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you. 3E, internal audit update.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'll take you through this report. And this is the first progress report to the committee on the work of internal audit. We tried to bring it as up to date as we can do, so it was written as at the end of October, and so it's just over half a year's work. But draw members' attention really to the appendices where the book of the detail is. Appendix 1 starts off with a progress report which does show at that sort of 31st of October that we were on track to complete the bulk of the internal audit work, taking into account the work that's in progress, and then there's a table with a summary of the assurances that we have given in the year. One of the things that I will update the committee on in terms of our progress is that we are likely now to slip on completion of work in the next part of the year. That's because our apprentice that we've taken on and who had qualified has now left us. He put his notice in and left. So the team has lost resources to give you an update in terms of where we are at with that to bolster the team. You're aware we were already covering one vacancy with some work from an external contractor. We've taken the decision not to give them extra work because they are struggling as well with the work they've done. So we have taken on an agency member of staff who started with us last week. So and he's an experienced auditor with a lot of skills, and I'm already impressed with how quickly he's been able to sort of hit the ground running for us with some of the work. So we are trying to mitigate the risk to completion of the plan, but just to forewarn you that we will be bringing an amended plan to a future committee just to tidy us through. And then obviously there are some other impacts as well, traditionally throughout the year as priorities change. So just going back to the detail of the report, say the ones to draw members' attention to in terms of the actual audits that we've completed are the first three in Appendix 2. So that is page 51 and 52 of the report. All of the other reports we issued up to that point were substantial assurances. So actually quite a good position. It's quite a good number of substantials to be issuing. However, probably of note to the committee is the agency staff and consultants report, and this is one that was a hat and go from the previous year, so it was originally on the previous year's plan. We have made quite a number of recommendations, and we've given that limited assurance, and essentially it's around the lack of a corporate overarching policy in how we manage these, how we keep the records. So it's not to say that what we're doing in taking agency staff on is totally broken across the council. It's the fact that we just haven't got that central record, we aren't being consistent, we haven't got the common policy to approach. And I suppose the bigger issues are really the IR35. So this is the calculation we have to do for HMRC to say whether there are tax through us or tax through somebody else or self-employed when we take somebody on who isn't on our payroll. We were finding evidence that these weren't always completed, or if they were completed they weren't always retained on file. So if we were ever asked by HMRC to evidence all of these, we would
somebody would have been in trouble then.
Probably
Judith.
Unfortunately, it is Judith's area, ultimately, but she has only taken it on recently. I think it is more about the fact that these can be done quite quickly. It probably takes 5 minutes to put one through. It's just the fact that we should really do it at the point we're taking people on and be able to evidence those. And again, the issue around lack of retaining evidence, so it's lack of procurement, and the fact that we haven't just gone to one agency to pick one person, it's that we have done a procurement exercise, we have gone out to test the market, and we feel that we can evidence that we're getting value for money. So a lot of it's that overarching policy and the record keeping that really is falling foul. And we've made some recommendations around consideration of call-off contracts where we are using people regularly, because there are some departments that naturally use a lot of agency staff to cover. So the street scene department, because they need bodies on the ground, and if somebody phones in sick, you quite often need short-term cover. Actually, they are primed to have an agreement with somebody to go to one agency, do the market testing periodically, and have that better arrangement rather than having to phone around and see what prices we can get on a day-to-day basis, potentially for them at 6 o'clock in the morning. And then finally, it's something to just make sure we're ticking the boxes for our compliance of health and safety and GDPR and those things, to make sure that we put agency staff through the appropriate training as though they were an employee. So have we done DSE assessments? Have we put them through a health and safety induction? Have we put them through GDPR to make sure that we're there? Now, that can either be getting assurance from the provider that they do it regularly, but also for some of the things, as I say, if we're taking somebody on to cut grass, have we actually given them an induction on our mowers and the safety and the intricacies of that particular machine to make sure they're safe? So it's although it's limited, it's that framework and that record keeping that's limited. As I say, I wouldn't want you to think that we are appalling that taking on agency staff and we're not covering the covering posts appropriately, and we're spending willy-nilly. I mean, that's more a budgeting issue that would come through Chris's team about the level of volume and cost of agency staff. But from our view, it's just making sure we are compliant. As I say, that one at the moment, when we've written this report, is still in draft. So there may be a few tweaks to some of the recommendations, but I think broadly, it's a sort of operational reason we haven't had that finalised with HR at the moment. I'd say not that I don't think that there would be too much of an issue in getting the bulk of those agreed. In terms of the other two, they're less of concern, but still some areas. We've given them partial assurance. And the first one is the landscape and leisure projects. And that really is around the fact that we hadn't got a risk register in corporate format and taking on board all of the corporate risks for these schemes. And that sounds worse than it can be. At times we have risk registers for some of those projects, but occasionally they're done by external consultants or contractors that we've got helping us deliver those schemes. The worry from the council's viewpoint is that they wouldn't put certain risks on there, such as that contractor going into liquidation and failing to deliver the project. They probably wouldn't recognise slippage on the project and failing to miss time at times for those projects. So from an audit viewpoint, we are saying, if we are reliant on an external risk register or a risk register in somebody else's format, then we would always ask the team internally to make sure they at least capture those corporate risks for the council in doing that project. So it, rather than just say, well, the consultant's doing the risk management, we don't need to worry about it. And again, I don't think there's been any major sort of issues in getting that one agreed. It's just about getting those in place now. The next one is a specific project that we've looked at about the transfer of information to land registry and moving our land charges records over to the land registry, who are taking responsibility for that as a point of contact for all councils, and then there's a national programme to move across. We found a few more problems with this, but some of them are symptomatic of other projects that we see. So I think one of the issues we've had here is it's an internal project from our side, and there was no dedicated project manager for the bulk of this project work. And defined project team to oversee the delivery of the project. So we weren't clear on exactly who was doing it, how it was being done, and in terms of somebody having ownership as project manager to do it. There was some project sponsor role, but again, they are that next level up to be supervising and having that strategic decision making almost for the project. It's that next level down to make sure that we are following an appropriate methodology, keeping all the project paperwork that we would see. And I think that flows through to the second point around that there wasn't a documented agreed project plan, which means that we weren't sure where we were in terms of delivery of this, hitting deadlines. And obviously, because we've got an external deadline to deliver to the land registry, we need to be working to something and make sure we can hit that.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And then the final point was around a decision to replace the current land charges system. And apologies, it looked like the sentence is incomplete at the end of there.
Right.
And that's to support the transfer and support the ongoing record keeping, that should say. Because although land registry are taking responsibility for the records, this council still needs to keep a land charges register and feed information to the land registry. And there are some issues with the current software not necessarily being the best tool to interface with the land registry system and to provide that data. And obviously we need to make a decision, are we going to upgrade before we transfer the data, or are we going to transfer the data and then try and do an upgrade? And then do an interim as well. So what we're pushing the team to is to make a decision and make sure that project...
Would it perhaps be a better decision to ask the Land Registry what is their preferred option? Because they're going to create mayhem for you if they demand the data in a certain format.
Apologies, Jack. I can see Judith champing at the bit to answer, because again, unfortunately, this is Judith's area now in terms of it's corporately an IT project, but it's also a sort of land charges project, which Judith has some interest in as well.
Yeah.
But I think to answer your question, it's not necessarily a decision for the Land Registry to inform us. They've already told us what data and what format we would need to supply it in. It's making sure our system can deliver that.
If I can add to that, I mean, there are a limited number of systems that we can use, and the trouble is the software we're on at the moment is coming to its end of its useful life. We've been offered a potential solution to that, but we don't have as much confidence in that as we would like, so we've been looking at other solutions. We thought we'd identified one, but that's not going to work for us in the way that we want to, so we're having to look at a couple of others. We can do it in a different way, and it's a Land Registry push, and there's still a little bit of uncertainty around their deadline for this, which hasn't helped with us in terms of project planning.
Yeah.
But if they do push it forward on the timetable that they've been talking about, we can make it happen. It just means we end up double keying things, which isn't where we want to be. It's not going to be the most efficient solution for us. So I say we're still weighing up those options. But one of the challenges we've got with it is it's sort of sitting with me, but it's not my long-term responsibility. I've just been kind of caretaking it until the new head of service arrives in January. It's just a bit of a capacity issue.
Are we going to write disaster waiting to happen on this one?
I do have some concerns about it, fair to say. We're doing what we can, but it is proving a bit of a challenge at the moment.
Having changed a number of IT systems, I always found it better to say, well, you tell me what you want and who provides that system. We'll change the way we do things to meet the system, rather than the thing I've seen people try and do is change the system to cope with the way that we do things. Never works.
No, we are looking at kind of the recognised ones that are around. But as I say, some of them aren't necessarily going to suit us, or they're going to be cost prohibitive. So it's trying to find a balance between the one we can afford and the one that's going to best suit where we're at the moment. Because this one, it doesn't stand on its own. It has to integrate into the planning system, the building control system. It's one that we're doing as a shared platform across the two councils. And that just makes it that more complicated.
Good luck.
Use the software that they use. Yeah.
When did you say you were retiring?
Is it financial?
Okay, thank you, Jack. I'll take you through the rest of the report. I mean, Appendix 3 is more for information and committee, so that's just showing the work that we have started but not completed in the period, so you should see those coming through. Appendix 4 is more relevant again to its committee, and this is the follow-up report, so it's progress on where audits that we have previously reported and progress in implementing those recommendations. So it's in terms of the number we've followed up, it isn't a great picture that only one of them we have seen all of the recommendations implemented to satisfy us and been able to offer a revised assurance. However, we do have an issue in terms of three of them have stayed at partial assurance, but the first one of those is building control, and really that sounds worse than it is. There is only one outstanding recommendation, and that's about procuring, doing a procurement exercise for the support they get for, I think it's structural engineers, so it's one specific element of their work that they outsource because we haven't got the technical skills. They've been using the same supplier for a long time because there is a limited pool, but we do need to evidence that we do periodically test the market to make sure we're getting best value, to make sure that we are with appropriate suppliers and things like that. So I'm less worried about that. Whilst it's still partial, it's one small element of building control. The rest of it is working well.
Right.
The next one is the change control in terms of IT, so what they're doing in terms of changing systems, doing upgrades, doing rolling forward with things like Microsoft upgrades and things like that. This is the second follow-up. And at this point, we have two of the recommendations totally implemented, three still in progress. And again, this comes down to one of the things that we're seeing. They're actually changing their processes. They have changed what they're doing. It's now about documenting what they've done and making sure we've got the records in terms of a fully up-to-date documented change control process. And that we've got a check, whilst we have a change advisory board, we haven't got a documented terms of reference to say what that does and how it works. So it's doing the, I suppose, the icing on the process. We've got the nuts and bolts sorted,
yeah.
But we aren't happy to get to change that assurance until they've done this.
Yeah, I'm hoping that the time they do the next follow-up that will be done, because I've now got the draft design. It's just now for me to review and take it to the leadership team for approval, so work has started to move on that one. And that will address all three of the outstanding recommendations.
Yeah.
And then the final one is the IT strategy and operational plans. Again, we've got one recommendation that hasn't been implemented. And this is about drafting an IT strategy. At the moment, there is a draft IT strategy. It just hasn't been approved.
Could I ask on that item, under the three headings, you've got zeros,
yeah.
And the total is one.
Apologies, Jack. That should be one that is in progress rather than not implemented. So that is just needs the zero corrected into the black column. As I say, in terms of that, there is a draft IT strategy and it does pick up some of the resourcing and issues that we would be looking for in that whole area that we audited. I think part of the issue, there has been a corporate zero-based budgeting exercise going on recently, and it would be prudent to tie in the new strategy and their resources alongside what's been doing corporately in terms of that exercise and what IT's budget will be, what projects are ongoing. So there is a legitimate reason for that being delayed, but again, it's something that is there in draft and just needs tidying up and getting approved. So again, I would be hopeful by the time we bring that to you next time, that one will be there and we can do that. So it looks worse than it is in terms of three out of four on that page not changing their assurance, but they have all moved to some degree, and we are hopeful that they will be a lot further down the line when we do our next updates. And again, it always looks worse than it is, because we only follow up those where we haven't given a substantial assurance in the first place. So we're following up a smaller pool, and they're always starting off from a lower assurance level. That's all I've got to say, Chair, so I'm happy to take questions.
Mr. Chairman?
No team progress, are we? Any second? Or have you got a question?
I've got a couple of questions.
go for it.
Right, page 50. So there are nine audits that you haven't started. What are they going to be? And on your top table, you've got 26 planned, 10 to draft, 7 in progress. How many of those? So that leaves you 9. And how many of those are actually going to be completed, do we think?
It's hard to say at the moment, because of a few issues, not necessarily our issues, but corporately, I am currently reviewing the whole remainder of the audit plan. So that there's a number that we won't do that are on the current plan that we may decide to remove from the plan totally. Okay. There are some things that we're considering adding into the plan that weren't on the original plan. And devoting some time to, and then there will be some things that we will start. So in terms of putting a figure on it, or even naming the audits, I would be hard pushed to do that at this point. Our target is always to try and complete 90% of the plan. With the resources I've got and with amendments, I would hope we would be able to get there or thereabouts in terms of 90% of the original plan. There are some other factors in there, as members of the committee will know, that we have carried forward some audits that slipped from last year to deliver in this year, and some of those are in the figures, in the mix of these figures, in terms of what we've completed this year as well. So it doesn't totally correlate with the audit plan that we've presented to you, right, and a total addition.
Right. Audits in progress 7.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
So can you explain to me why Appendix 3 says 8? Or am I being thick and stupid?
Apologies.
Just proves I've been reading the document.
It may just be an error in there. That list is accurate in terms of the 31st of October of the audits that we have in progress. I was just looking if the Disabled Facilities Grant is one that we would count as an audit, but we have already counted the assurance statement work and noted that separately, so that isn't a transposition of the piece that's outside the audit.
And my other one is for the IT ones, are we going to get a final deadline of when these can be finished? It's been dragging on. I mean, in a number of years I've been sitting on this committee. IT seems to slip like crazy every time.
I don't understand why.
Can I just clarify, are we talking about us moving the follow-ups that has still got the partial assurance to where the substantial assurance?
Partial assurance here, you know, when's this going to be done?
Right, so the ones that are identified in this report are committed to delivering by the 31st of March, so by the end of this financial year.
Report noted, I recommend, Mr. Chairman.
Would it be worth asking for an update? A little note to the committee to say where you got to on moving these audits through?
In terms of the audits that are in progress in that list, the next audit committee report will bring an update to you at our February. So you
what
will get.
What about the 9 that haven't been started
an
yet?
There. I would imagine by the time we're at that committee meeting, we will have had a revised audit plan, and in the progress report will be a comment asking the committee to note the revision to the audit plan.
And I thought you were going to give us a number there.
Yeah, no. I can't. At the moment, I can't give you a number because some things may change. We may decide to put more time into some of those areas. So.
Like asking him for his favourite colour, and he'll say tartan.
But we will bring, as I say, the committee will get to approve the revised plan to say what we formally drop in, brought in, and we will give you an update where
did,
we are.
Did we hear you commit to 90%?
Our target is 90% of the plan. I will commit to 90% of the revised audit plan. once you agree that.
Having revised it,
In terms of... I would like to hope that we can still hit 90% of the original plan because we brought the additional resources into the team to try and do that. And we should see a number of those hangover audits delivered, which will boost our production of audits in the year. Right.
Noted with your additions, especially the 90%, Jim.
That's the bit I want. So noted, I move, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you very much. And the annual RIPA review, page 55.
Chair, I'll pick this one up. It really is just brought to the committee's attention for information. We are expected, it's a matter of good practice, to just do an annual review of our arrangements for sort of like regulatory investigatory powers act.
Yeah.
So the report sets out the arrangements we've got in place. We do have a policy in place. The monitoring officer acts as the senior responsible officer for this area, supported by the legal services manager in keeping relevant records. But as you will see towards the end of the report, we haven't actually used the different powers in the last 12 months. So there isn't really much else to be said on this. But it's something we very, very rarely use. When we do, it is very strictly controlled. Yeah.
Any questions?
So noted, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you very much. an eventful evening. Hopefully we solve our problems in the not too distant future.
I want to see what this 90% is going to be.